So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Okay, a few years ago, people started saying that you can no longer say breastfeeding. You have to say chest feeding. And I just thought this was hilarious. Like, honestly, we just have to laugh. At a certain point, you just laugh, you leave it be at that, and you move on, okay? I mean, this, you've got to be kidding me. But there's a new one. There is a new one. You should no longer say breastfeeding. You should say chest feed. Now, you also shouldn't say breast milk, but you should say human milk. Human milk. Okay? That's how we need to put these things from now on, because everything must be gender neutral. Everything must be inclusive. But everything must be a lie. We should lie about the body, about what is biologically and anatomically proper or even possible. But no, it's PC, should we say, to refer to things with gender-neutral pronouns, to refer to things as all-inclusive language. We don't want dads to be left out. God forbid dads are left out of this nursing chest feeding. I mean, I can't believe it. But believe me when I say this. This is the latest news from England. Midwives in Brighton and Sussex University Hospital are being told to use the words chest feeding and not breastfeeding, and to use the words human milk and not breast milk. And, you know, you can actually use those other words, but alongside them, you need to use human milk and chest feeding as well. This is laughable. And it's a moment for us to laugh, but also to say, we need to say what's real about the body. I am not one of those people who is a fan of, like, whipping it out. You know, they talk about free the nipple campaigns, and we talk about, like, all those women who had the protest at Target a few, like, 5 or 6 years ago, where they just went and decided to, like, breastfeed nurse in public rather intensely and, like, prove a point that they should be welcomed. I totally get that. However, we don't need to expose ourselves and be exhibitionists. There's a sense of modesty that needs to occur. And I think that there is something to modestly nursing in public, right, with a covering. However, part of the reason for that is I think it's important for people to know the function, the purpose of the body, and to not just hide it from people. Now, I get it. There are primitive cultures that are all for one room sleeping arrangements and getting the kids to know what happens with the body. I'm not for that. That goes way too far. But what I am saying is that there needs to be this familiarity and understanding with what the human body is created for. That it's created for love, sacrificial love. Both in terms of how the bodies engage with one another, male and female, in marriage, but also in terms of what the purpose of the body is, what the purpose God had in store for our bodies. And so this is important to remember as we hear crazy stories like this and we laugh at new slang language of human milk and chest feeding. But here's another story for you that has had me cracking up. Okay, so out of Lake Jackson, Texas, this mom has gone ahead and tackled a man who she accused of being a peeping Tom on her daughter. I'll get to that in just a minute. But if you're just joining us, the number is 1-888-914-9149 to join the conversation. My guest today is Reggie Littlejohn. She is the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. And they are an incredible organization working essentially against the one-child policy in China, where the Chinese Communist Party is forcing women to have abortions, to be sterilized, and even they're forcing infanticide to kill those babies after they're born, as well as the impact this has also had on sex trafficking there in China. So Reggie Littlejohn will be joining me in just a little bit, but let's get to this linebacker of a mom. This story is awesome. Lake Jackson, Texas, mom calls the police, guys, Peeping Tom on her daughter. The police are there, and on the police camera, they actually catch the mom tackling this man. Now, we're going to share this on Twitter right now because you've got to check out the video. Like, you've actually got to watch it. She just nails this guy. And I'm kind of sitting here thinking, why is the police officer just standing there still capturing this video? I'm just saying, maybe it came off of his truck. I don't know, but there's clearly no immediate, quick interference of a police officer in this story. So, kudos to this mom. I mean, come on. Couldn't the police get him themselves? I'm just saying, and I don't know the full context of why the mom had to get this dude, but here's what stood out to me. Did the police possibly not take this seriously? And just kind of be like, yeah, it's just a peeping Tom, someone looking in someone's window. We're not going to worry about, like, chasing this guy down. And instead, the mom full-on has to go and run down this man as he's running from the police. And she takes him down to the ground. And then the daughter pins him down. Listen to this audio that we have from KPRC2 in Houston talking about it.
I figured at least I could do if I got him down, tripped him up, whatever, then they, you know, have a chance to get caught up. First instinct was just to make sure he didn't go any further. My kids are my life, and, you know, just making sure I protect them, pretty much.
Not very often that we have somebody that actually steps in and puts themselves in harm's way to assist in apprehending somebody.
And the cop, you know, fist bumped me, and he was like, hey, so I heard Texans are looking for a new linebacker.
And while she can laugh about it now, Phyllis was in mom mode at the time, saying she just wanted to protect her kids.
Okay, waiting for the police to catch up. Just saying here. This one kind of got me. I mean, honestly, the fact that a mom had to say that she was waiting for the police to catch up, not because they weren't there, but because she took him to the ground. Again, the daughter pinned him down. This is fantastic. But this also brings up the story of, what are you willing to do for your kids? You can't trust anyone else to take care of them. She couldn't trust the police officers to take this man down, in this instance, from peeping on her kids, from just being a weirdo in the front yard, right? But it brings up a bigger question. Here are some people who are willing to do everything they can to ensure the physical safety of their kids. You know, walk with your pepper spray. Watch out for peeping Toms outside the door. Call the cops. You know, do safe physical things. Heck, people are all into physical distancing anymore. You go to a park and, I mean, five-year-olds are told to run from other kids if they don't stay a car's length away from each other. So we're all about physical distancing. But what happens when we allow curriculum into our schools that create confusion about what it means to be male or female and tells little children to experiment with their bodies? What about when media, cell phones, and tablets are in the kids' hands throughout the day, late at night, and kids are being exposed to pornography or illicit content, or even bullying, as Lieutenant Colonel Grossman mentioned earlier in the week about the little girl who was being bullied online all night long, and she couldn't defend herself enough to the point where she ended up committing suicide. And this was a good little girl, got good grades. And this is where I bring up the question, you know, here's a great example of physical safety for someone's kids, but what about the steps that are being willing to be made to create safety for kids, specifically within the context of digital media? Are you willing to limit your kids' phone time? Perhaps not give them a phone until beyond the age of it being cool to get a phone. Are you willing to take that phone away at night to create boundaries and restrictions and time limits on the phone and the tablet? Because just as much as physical safety is important, even more so in the realm of digital media, that's important too. It's fundamental. Because physical safety is actually going out the door because kids are engaging in harmful behaviors, both in terms of how they engage with their own bodies physically on a harmful level, even confusing themselves with regard to their sexuality as well. And the culture encourages that. And so that's kind of what I got from this linebacker of a mom who was willing to take down this peeping Tom, who I think was like 19 years old. It really is a reminder that we need to care for physical safety in more than one way, as well as digital safety online. So I encourage you, don't be afraid to make your kid the uncool person who doesn't have a cell phone, who doesn't have their phone at night, and so forth. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Reggie Littlejohn, and I'm really excited to talk with her about what's happening in China, because there's not a lot of honesty about what's happening with regard to the so-called two-child policy there in China. So if you're with us, stay tuned. We're going to discuss that in a little bit. Can you believe it? Lent starts next week. And we want to help you on your Lenten journey with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass. When you sign up for Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons, you'll receive a daily email where Father will walk you through the different parts of the Mass. In each Lenten lesson, you can read or listen to Father give a detailed explanation of a certain aspect of our beautiful liturgy. Plus, you'll also receive a daily bonus video to accompany each Lenten lesson, with Father Rocky giving you a behind-the-scenes and more detailed look at the different parts of the Mass. The first Lenten lesson will be sent out Ash Wednesday. That's this coming Wednesday, February 17th. So sign up now by clicking on the banner on the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com. And we are already gearing up for Ash Wednesday, for Lent, and we've been discussing this. Our guest, Kendra Tierney, just earlier this week here on the show, you can catch the podcast at relevantradio.com/trending. We talk about liturgical living and some of the fun feast days that can break up Lent in order for us to enjoy and celebrate the feast days and enjoy some foods that maybe we've not been eating for a little while. And we'll also go ahead and have opportunities in that podcast for how you can enter into the spirit of Lent for your kids as well, because it's important to have that physical and emotional circumstance where they understand this is a different season and it feels different, both for us, but also for kids as well. You're listening to Trending with Tim Marie, and we're going to come back in just a little bit, and we're going to discuss with Reggie Littlejohn the importance of understanding what is happening in China with the one-child policy. Did you know that nearly 600 women a day are committing suicide in China? Why? Well, I think there's a lot that we'll learn about it with my guest in just a little bit. It's the only place in the world where we see more suicides of women than men, when we know, in general, suicide's a little more common among men, but not in China. We'll be right back here on Trending with Tim Marie. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
If you have a question for my guest, the number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can go leave a comment on my Instagram story. We'd love to hear from you and hear what you'd like to hear discussed here on Trending. Reggie Littlejohn is the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. It's an international coalition that exposes and opposes forced abortion, gendercide, and sexual slavery, specifically in China. We've mentioned before that China two-child policy, so-called two-child policy. To share with us a little bit more about what's happening in China and what we should expect possibly with the upcoming Olympics in Beijing is Reggie Littlejohn. Reggie, welcome to Trending.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
Reggie, we have seen numbers out there giving two very shocking things, both related to China and worldwide. One, the United Nations has estimated about 200 million girls are missing in the world due to sex-selective abortion. Now, predominantly, we see this coming out of China, and India is really a runner-up right after that, where there's preferential treatment for having boys over girls. The other shocking thing is that China has the highest suicide rate for women in the world. And in fact, in general, it's more common for men than women to commit suicide. Why is that? And how does all of this relate to the work you're doing there in China?
Timber, those are really big questions. But so the China is the only country in the world that has a coercive birth limit. So it used to be called the one-child policy, where anybody who had more than one child would get forcibly aborted. Now it's a two-child policy, so third children can still be forcibly aborted. And we can talk about how that is, the enforcement of that is really ramped up in one area of China called Xinjiang. But generally in China, because of son preference, so many couples, if they can only have one child, they wanted it to be a boy. Or if they can have two children, they want one of them to be a boy. So what happens is that people will let, if they have a girl on the first child, they will let her live. But then some couples will just keep aborting until they get a boy on that second child. And there was a case a couple years ago where there was a woman whose husband forced her to abort four baby girls in a year. And then she died.
So that's
the relationship of the one-child policy and even the two-child policy to that number that you cited, the 200 million worldwide of girls, of women and girls who are missing because they were aborted before they were born.
Right. I want to come to the suicide topic in a question in a minute, but I have a question about the so-called two-child policy. Am I correct in understanding, because you're there on the ground, that it was a one-child policy, now it's a two-child policy. Now, in order for it to be two children, you still have to get permission for that second child. If you, let's say, have both of the parents come from a child of one home, one-child home, and they're married, you have to be married in order to have these children as well.
That was the rule for a number of years until they created a universal two-child policy. So that took effect in 2016. And now all couples in China are allowed to have two children. But something that you should know is that these rules are not practiced uniformly across China. So before, it used to be the case that you would have to have a birth permit in order to have a child. And that there would be a waiting period, so that it depended where you live. It could be 3 years, could be 4 years, could be 5 years between children. And so even if you were allowed to have a second child, if you got pregnant during the waiting period, you would still be subject to forced abortion. Now, that has been loosened up in mainland China, although not completely, because there was a report that came out in Radio Free Asia, I think it was October or November of last year, so pretty recently, saying that according to an official Chinese Communist Party news outlet, 8 million so-called extra births were terminated in China last year.
Due to COVID?
Since this came out last year, it was the previous year, so 2019, 8 million. So in the United States, we have about 1 million, and these are so-called extra pregnancies, so that they would have been forcibly aborted because the woman would not have been given a choice. But even now in this one province of China, they are heavily enforcing this. And I don't know if you've heard that the United States, Secretary Pompeo, on his last day in office, he declared what's going on against the Uyghur Muslim minorities in Xinjiang, China, to be genocide. Did you hear about that?
Wow.
There was a genocide determination because they are forcibly aborting, forcibly sterilizing, and even committing infanticide, killing full-term born babies there if they are third children or if they are not, if the woman has not waited for the sufficient period of time that they require between births.
Now, Reggie, Reggie, if you're just joining us, that's Reggie Littlejohn from Women's Rights Without Frontiers, doing incredible work against the two-child policy in China, forced sterilization, abortion, sex slavery. And for those who probably don't know the story, because it's been, over 10 years, Reggie, I know you and I had connected at the time over the Chen Guangcheng story. Could you give a little bit of an overview of what happens when someone speaks up like Chen did, and kind of the house arrest and the kidnapping and everything that occurred for their family? I know that's a lot, but just maybe a little synopsis to see if someone speaks up against this party, what has happened to these people?
I'm really glad you asked that, Timmy, because sometimes I get these comments on my website, like, we have abortions here. Why don't you care about what's happening here? Why are you caring about what's happening in China? Mm-hmm. And the thing is that we have many, many effective pro-life groups in the United States, and I'm friends with a lot of the presidents of these pro-life groups, and they're doing great work. We are the only people who have a network on the ground inside of China that is actually saving baby girls from sex selective abortion, all right? And we've saved hundreds of baby girls. And when you talk about Chen Guangcheng, his story shows what happens to people who try to say what I'm saying, but say it from Chinese soil. So Chen Guangcheng, mm-hmm. Like 10 years ago, he and his very brave wife, Yuan Weijing, decided that what they were going to do is they were going to expose what was going on in terms of forced abortion and forced sterilization just in their little area, which is Linyi, China. So they went out and they interviewed people and they put together a report. And for that, Chen was jailed, tortured brutally. His family was terribly, mm-hmm. terribly persecuted. And, I led the International Coalition to free him. I don't know what would have happened to him if we had not shined the light on what they were doing to him, because, so we were able, the entire international community was able to get Chen Guangcheng from China to the United States, and he now lives in Maryland and is one of my very dearest friends. So it's one of the happiest days of my entire life when he set foot on the United States. Soil.
Oh gosh, I remember walking through that entire story, because you were one of the few people keeping the world updated on what was happening there. And this is a man who was blind, who was speaking up. And I remember the sunglasses campaign where everyone was praying, they were putting on sunglasses and taking photos, asking to free Chen. But then it was miraculous that he actually escaped. He wasn't actually released in the entire situation. I mean, this was a man who spoke up and who has sought asylum here in the United States. So let's unpack a little bit more of the impact that this two-child policy, forced abortion, it's important that people understand, forced sterilization. They are forcefully holding women down on those tables, even in their own homes, to have those abortions performed, for sterilization to occur against their will. So connect that to the high suicide rate of nearly 600 women a day.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that that China has the highest female suicide rate of any country in the world. And as you said, in I think almost every other country, more men than women commit suicide. And in the Chinese countryside, the way that the preferred method is by drinking pesticides, which is just a horrible way to go. I mean, it's slow, it's painful, it's horrible. So you can imagine the amount of pain that these women are in, these mental pain that they're in. And I think that there's a number of reasons for it. I mean, domestic violence is really prevalent in China. And Chinese women, I mean, it's just like sex selective abortion. Of baby girls, they are not held in esteem. I mean, the message of sex selective abortion is that women and girls are of so little value that we don't even deserve to take breath on this earth. And if a woman is forced by her family, and that's the way it works, to abort her baby or to abandon her baby because she's a girl, what does that do to her feeling of her own right to draw breath on the face of this earth? And I think that is a main reason. The forced abortions, the traumatic abortions that happen from the government, and then the sex selective abortions, which are under pressure from the family, I think are huge contributing factors to the suicide rate in China, the female suicide rate in China.
Mm. And no one talks about the orphan situation there, where they're removing these children from the homes. The children are being put up on the black market into sex slavery. They're being sold for adoption purposes into some areas, but also orphanages. I mean, these kids who are born so-called illegally because of the one and now two-child policy, these kids are at times, they end up in orphanages where, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is it around 13-ish years old where a child is considered an adult there, but they have no birth certificate, no access to healthcare, no access to education, can't leave the country because they're technically illegal, according to the government.
Well, yeah, I mean, that kind of conflates two issues. One is, and a friend of mine, my dear friend Jing Zhang, published a book called The Orphans of Zhao, where they were talking about this extremely scandalous thing where it wasn't just a matter of a family getting fined a huge social compensation fee for having an out-of-plan birth, but that the children were actually removed. And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that we no one knows what to do about it, because they're adopted by families who think that they're adopting a kid that's been abandoned. And, you know, it's just the whole thing is just catastrophic all the way around. But what we do
yes.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say something. I didn't follow up on it, but I mentioned, and I didn't follow up this all the way, the children become technically kind of legally adults around 13 and 14-ish years old there in China. And so if they're in an orphanage, they're put out on the streets, they're made destitute, they have no access to education, healthcare, and so forth. And so the whole system, and I always encourage people, if you can, not that it makes any better, but if you can adopt a child from an orphanage in China, and these children are left familyless, I mean, totally abandoned in this culture. And we need to do what we can. So if you can share a little bit more about your work, and I would love for you to share the story about the twins that your field workers were able to save as well.
Right. So what happens is, you know, if people have an out-of-plan pregnancy, they can just try to hide the kid. And so these kids are called are illegal children. And then they have no access to health care or benefits, or they have no birth certificate, and they have no existence in their own, no legal existence in their country. But what we do is we have a network on the ground inside of China that is actively saving baby girls. And the story that you're referring to about the twins is there is a woman in our area who got pregnant, and her mother-in-law, and that's usually the one who's pressuring them, her mother-in-law started pressuring her to get an ultrasound. And these women, they don't want to get the ultrasound because they know what happens when you have an ultrasound, which is if it's a boy, then there will be a celebration. And if it's a girl, there will be pressure to abort her. That's why they want the ultrasound. So she dragged her feet until she was very, very pregnant. I don't remember if she was 6 months, 7 months pregnant, finally went in for the ultrasound and discovered that she was pregnant not only with one, but with two girls. So even under the two-child policy, she would have used up her entire quota of children with one pregnancy, and they'd be both be girls. And so her mother-in-law just started really pressuring her to abort that pregnancy, both of those girls. And thank God we found out about her, and our field worker went to her home and said, congratulations on your baby girls. Girls are as good as boys. And we will offer you not just one, but we will offer you two monthly stipends to help you keep your babies. And so what that did is it turned the whole situation around, because she was able to go back to her husband, go back to her mother-in-law and say, you know, I can't abort these baby girls. Look, they're lucky girls. They're already bringing money into the family. And we were able to save those girls, twin girls.
Praise God. So now praise God. That's incredible.
Because they're, of course, adorable.
That is so incredible to hear. And it takes having people on the ground listening. Who's pregnant? What's happening? How can I help? And people talk a lot about how it's in the pro-life movement, especially for crisis pregnancy centers, it's difficult for the crisis pregnancy centers today to reach women who are actually considering an abortion, because so often they've taken Plan B already. They're on multiple types of contraception, or Planned Parenthood has just such good marketing. They get to them first. They're in the kids' pockets as teenagers here in the state of California. And so to hear that field workers are there listening on the ground in China, it's a reminder for us here in our own country that we too need to be watching behavior, listening, because we have a culture that also has pressure to abort. Whereas there in China, it's the one child, two child policy. It is sex selective abortion. That's the type of family life that they live there, as my producer Karen said, versus here, we've convinced women that you need to have that family life on your timing with the number of children you want as well. And so it's a cultural pressure that's happening in both countries in a sense. Any thoughts there?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I wanted to talk about also in terms of the female suicide rate is there's a related issue, which is the senior suicide rate. Okay, so because we're also saving abandoned widows, and I call them the invisible victims of the one-child policy, because people don't think about widows as being victims, but you know, where we are, it's a rural area, and traditionally the big families would support the widows, you know, when they got old, and now there aren't big families, and there's no one to support them, and senior suicide has skyrocketed in China over the last 20 years in conjunction with the one-child policy. And it's skyrocketed 500%. So we're also saving abandoned widows and going to their doors and bringing them, you know, monthly stipends for the rest of their lives, or as long as we're, you know, Women's Rights Without Frontiers is able to do this. And they're incredibly grateful for this, incredibly grateful. And our field workers are Christians, and they love to talk about Jesus. And so we're not going to tell them they can't. We're not going to restrict their religious freedom. And all kinds of people are coming to the Lord. And at Christmas, there are three mothers of babies who were baptized, you know. So that's pretty cool.
Wow, that's incredible. And oh gosh, we could even talk about what's happening with the church there in China. That's a topic for another day. But to hear that hope is being brought to women there in China, helping to save their babies, being a friend, a resource to help people continue to live their lives who are abandoned, these widows. And this is what we're called to do as Christians. And it doesn't take just Reggie there going in with her coalition. It takes us supporting people like Reggie and others, doing the same type of work here in our own community as well. So, Reggie, I want to come back and talk about how this all relates to the two-child policy and as well as the issue of sex trafficking and the upcoming Olympics in Beijing 2022. We'll be right back with Reggie Littlejohn here on Trending. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can leave a comment now on my Instagram at Tim Ray. Just find me by heading over to relevantradio.com/trending.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'm back with Reggie Littlejohn. She speaks out against forced abortion, sterilization, and infanticide committed by the Chinese Communist Party with her organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers. You want to talk about abortion? You want to talk to someone who has radical feminist ideas, who disagrees with you about abortion, contraception, so forth? Talk about what's happening in China, because I think we can all agree that forced abortion and sex selective abortion, high suicide rates among women, the lack of kind of legal status for those who were born legally in China, the sex trafficking, that's not okay. And we can find a common mission there. But if we can bring people into understanding what's happening in China, I really have seen in conversations that this is a bridge to get people into the pro-life movement, to open their eyes and see what is truly happening, both in the pro-life movement abroad and here in the United States. With me again is Reggie Littlejohn. Reggie, let's talk a little bit about why you're opposing the upcoming 2022 Olympics in Beijing, because it's in China.
Oh, well, what's happening is this. The Chinese government has been, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, on his last day in office, said that what the Chinese government is doing in Xinjiang province is genocide. So what's going on within Xinjiang? There's a population of Uyghurs, Kazakhs, other Muslim minorities that are not of Chinese origin. They don't speak Chinese. They're of Turkic origin, and the Chinese government is brutally interning them. They've got over from 1 to 3 million in internment camps. They are forcibly sterilizing the women. They are forcibly aborting the women. They are committing infanticide against the women. They are jailing people for what they call religious extremism. And their definition of religious extremism is those who think that the fetus is a gift from God. So you and I would be religious extremists. And so they're putting them in re-education camps, and they are removing their children, so that you know if you end up in a religious education camp, re-education camp, they can take your kids away. They will put them in boarding schools where they will be indoctrinated to be Chinese communists. But what they're doing is they're systematically eradicating Uyghur people and Uyghur culture. That's genocide. And so because China is committing genocide, they have no business hosting the Winter Olympics in 2022. That's a very prestigious event, and they're just going to use it just like they used the previous Olympics to try to convince the world of what a great country they are and just cover the earth with propaganda. So I'm not in favor of boycotting the Olympics. I don't want, you know, I want the athletes to be able to compete. I mean, I used to be an athlete. I was a really committed, totally mediocre athlete, okay? And I would have been really, really unhappy to not be able to compete in my own little mediocre way, all right? You know, so I really feel for the athletes. And what I would like to see is to see the Olympics moved. And I'm not the only one who feels this way, okay? There was a group of something like 180 groups that called for, I think, a boycott of the Olympics. And these are mostly Uyghur groups, Tibetan groups, Hong Kong-based groups. But there were half a dozen senators, U.S. senators, that said that they thought that the Olympics Committee should move the Olympics to a free country. And then in Canada, there are some MPs, ministers of parliament, who are saying that they would like to see Canada host the Winter Olympics. I mean, they've got the infrastructure to do it. I would love to see that happen so that the athletes can compete and so that we can let Beijing know that we disagree with what they're doing so strongly that we're not going to participate in their event.
Amen. Amen. I hope that we see at the very least this becoming an opportunity for greater awareness of the genocide, the gendercide, the sex trafficking, everything that's happening there in China. But at least bring it up. This is a tabletop conversation. Why are people boycotting the Olympics? Why are people opposing the location of the Olympics in Beijing? This is your opportunity to talk about what is happening in China by talking about sports. This is why we talk about trending topics and conversation here on Trending. Now, let's tie this into, we know very often wherever the Olympics are, there is a massive push for sex trafficking in those areas. Do you think that that could be part of the reason why China would like to have the Olympics there? Because sex trafficking is so prominent there. I mean, it's such a lucrative business, and this is what comes side by side with the Olympics, tourism, and all the athletes.
Well, I'm not sure that that China is hosting the Olympics in order to, you know, to have more sex trafficking. But I will say that China is one of the worst sex trafficking countries in the world. I mean, there's something that comes out every year. It's called the Trafficking in Persons Report. It comes out from the State Department. And according to the 2020 report, which is the most recent report, China is a Tier 3 nation, which is the worst. So that means that they have massive sex trafficking. They are, because of the one-child policy, there are now, estimates vary, but 30 to 40 million more men in China living than women, and so China is trafficking women from within China and also from the surrounding countries, and also interestingly enough, they also supply women and girls to other countries. So I don't know how they can do that when they don't have enough women and girls, but they do. And so they're just a major destination and purveyor of sex trafficked women and girls.
And there have been comparisons with the number of marriable men. I've heard that by this past year, there would be over 30 million marriable men who would not have the ability to find a spouse there because of the gender side that has occurred, because there are so fewer girls than men. Now, they've compared that to, for example, modern day Pakistan. They've compared it to Japan during to Vietnam. This is what happens when we create this atmosphere where male-female dynamic is destroyed, where we create the inability to have that complementarity, the ability to raise a family. There's severe aggression that occurs within those cultures among men. And it's something that there's a huge concern internationally with regard to China as well.
Well, that's right. And so it's a situation where so women are sort of upwardly mobile because there are fewer of them. So what that does is it means that out in the countryside, in the poorer areas, there are no marriage-age women because they've all moved up to the local town or the local city, and they call these bachelor villages, which is just a recipe for huge social unrest and possible insurrection. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of the reason that China is one of the worst countries in the world in terms of enforcing they do not adequately enforce the laws against sex trafficking, because I think that they feel that they need these trafficked women to make sure that they don't have an insurrection on their hands of all these marriage age men whose wives were aborted before they were born.
Wow. So we'll abort all the women. We'll create a culture of abortion for women. We won't allow women to be alive here in our nation, but then we're going to allow for sex trafficking and the exploitation of women because we've created this huge gap in terms of men and women. It's just unbelievable what is happening. What more can you tell us about sex slavery in China and how this ties into the abortion issue?
Well, one thing I can say is that there's a real issue with North Korean women who are trafficked into China. What happens is, if human rights is worse anywhere in the world than China, it's North Korea, and it's just like a black hole there, and it's just horrific the human rights abuses that are going there. So people will risk their lives to get into China because the human rights are actually better in China than they are in North Korea. And these women and girls will risk their lives to get over the border into China, and then they get immediately snapped up into the sex slave trade. You know, or they can be tricked into coming into China, like, oh, we're going to give you this great job, and actually they're going to become like in a forced marriage situation, and they can't go to the authorities to say, look, you know, I am being trafficked. I'm being forced to be a prostitute. I'm being beaten. I'm being tortured. They can't go to the authorities about that because the Chinese authorities will say, oh, you're an illegal economic migrant, and they will repatriate them back to North Korea. And in North Korea, escaping the country is considered to be treason. And you can actually end up being executed for that. So these are some of the hapless souls on the face of the earth. So I pray for these women. I don't want the listeners to feel. I mean, I know that when I think about this, the North Korean women in particular, it just breaks my heart. And it's hard because we can't get in there to help them. You know, we're in one area of China. It's not anywhere near North Korea. So lift up these North Korean refugees in your prayers and. That God will save them, because that's who's going to have to save them.
Amen. Amen. Reggie, thank you for what you're doing. It's not easy to hear. It's a heavy topic, but it's something we need to be aware of. And again, it's an opportunity. People say they're feminist. People say they're pro-woman. Talk about what is happening in China and how it relates to abortion. It is eye-opening and shocking for people to hear, and it really provides the opportunity for people to open their eyes to the pro-life position and how pro-woman it truly is. Reggie, we have a call. I'd like to hear your thoughts. We have from Santa Ana, California, a question about boycotting Chinese goods. Mike, welcome to Trending. What's your question for Reggie?
Thank you. I would wonder what I can do to support the efforts to reform China. And my first thought is to boycott Chinese goods. But somebody responded that that would hurt the Chinese people. So is it good to boycott or not?
Well, okay, Reggie, if you could answer your thoughts there.
Yeah, I think it's a fine thing to boycott Chinese goods. But the problem is that we do so much online shopping. So, for example, if you buy something on Amazon.com, they don't say what country it's from. And you buy it, and it arrives, and it says made in China, and you had no idea. So I would like to see a law enacted that requires people, vendors on the internet to disclose where their products are made, so that people can boycott if they want to.
Excellent. I think that's a really good start. Yeah. And starting to speak up about it. I mean, the Olympics being in Beijing is a perfect opportunity to start bringing greater light to this issue overall. Reggie, thank you so much for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about her work, support her, you can check out womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. Again, that's womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. She is the founder and president, and we'll be sure to link to that as well, both on social media and in the podcast notes. If you're not subscribed, head over to relevantradio.com/trending, where you can listen to this podcast, share it, and get that link to connect with Reggie and her incredible work. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. We had a question come in about finding the balance between being a mom, being a wife, taking care of yourself. We hear a lot about me time, taking care of yourself, really taking the moment to not be selfish, but to really, you know, give yourself that nurturing care. And there are a lot of people who say, I don't know what the balance is. I hate personally the word me time or self-nurturing or all of these words that we hear, but it's also important. We're body and soul. And so I wanted to take a few minutes to discuss how we can work at taking better care of ourselves and kind of having those minimums of things that are most important for prayer, life, body, mind, all of those. So I've broken it up into mind, body, and soul. Before I touch on that, I think it's important to recognize that there are minimums that we really need to touch on that should be non-negotiables in our day. For example, morning prayer, making that morning offering, and taking the time in the evening to pray your night prayers, give glory and thanksgiving to God, and to do that nightly examination of conscience. Those should be non-negotiable that we have to learn how to implement into our day. And so starting by touching on the soul, I want to encourage you, you know, it's important to schedule that out. And I know a lot of people say, well, there are distractions. I've got kids. I have a busy schedule. So many moms I hear from, it just means you have to wake up that 20 minutes earlier, that half an hour earlier. It means that you're praying after bed, after the kids go to bed, and you're taking that time together. It can also mean participation, where you're praying the family rosary together at a specific time each night, and whoever's present is present. Hey, you can pray the family rosary here in just a few minutes with Relevant Radio with Karen Moran and Father Rocky. And this is what a lot of people do. That's their time to sit down and pray the rosary together. So your soul matters so much in this question. Morning offering, night prayer. What do the saints encourage? At least 30 minutes of silent prayer a day. That could be 15 minutes in the morning, 15 at night, 20 in the morning, 10 at night. Splitting it up if you have to, we're doing it together. What's also recommended? That daily rosary. So make it a family activity. And also, if you can, find a way to incorporate Mass. You know, there are certain churches that have pretty cool times of the day where Mass is available. Lunchtime, before the crack of dawn, later into the evening. But let's talk about body, because that's really important. If you don't know, I'm a certified Pilates trainer. I work with all kinds of injuries and health issues for people who have severe injuries to people who just want to get a good little bit of Pilates exercise in. And the bottom line is all the studies show for people, whether they have chronic health issues or whether or not it's someone who's totally healthy, that 30 minutes of movement and exercise a day is important. And so how do you get that 30 minutes in a day? Well, I think that it comes back to, we have to have those time-blocked calendars of certain chunks of the day that are dedicated to particular things, where we have that goal that's on our time, even if it gets moved up or back a little bit, that it's happening. 30 minutes a day. For you, it may be going for a run. For another person, it might be walking. For another, it might be taking 30 minutes. I can tell you, exercise has changed since I've been pregnant and now I've had a baby. My husband laughs at me because I play my African Cuban tribal dance music and I do my fitness exercises. If the baby's awake, I'll just tell you, my baby girl loves it. She's kicking her leg. She's dancing along to the music. I'm going to have to get a video of it one of these days, because it turns into a group activity rather than me just kind of exercising and ignoring her. Or if she's asleep, great, I can get my exercise in while she's asleep. But I really just try to schedule it and be sure that it's something that happens. And for me, it's a minimum of five days a week. I have to get that exercise in 5 days a week. Might look a little different each day. It might mean more of a walk. It might mean, you know, something different than what is day to day. Hey, the other day, my dad came and helped me take care of the baby. And we played Frisbee golf at the park nearby. And, you know, things can kind of look a little different day to day based on your social circumstances and who's present. But I'm a huge advocate, because I've been in the fitness world for so long. If you have kids and they're a distraction and they like to crawl all over you, use that as a part of your exercise. Change the type of exercise you do. Make them hyper and excited with you. Find ways to hold them while you exercise. It's something I'm learning as well. If, you know, the baby really needs me to hold her. Being creative, you know, there's so many incredible YouTube videos and opportunities to walk, push the stroller. I think that it's important to be creative and just have that goal of 30 minutes a day, whether it's you alone or it's you with your kids as well. You know, my mom always set a really good example that she had to exercise every day. It was important. She had to get ready and do her makeup and get dressed each day. Even if that meant that it was in the middle of the afternoon or at 8 o'clock in the morning, taking care of yourself is so important. And so making those minimums and setting the standard really does make a difference. Join me this Monday. I'm really excited. During our happy hour, we're going to be talking about self-manifestation and whether or not that's kosher for Catholics.